The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Welcome back to our reading from the September 2023 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. 90 years worth of Our State magazine, by the way. They started in 1933. And the theme this month is Take the Scenic Route, 35 Ways to See North Carolina. And let's get started on some of those ways. The tour issue, Follow the Leader. There are many ways to see North Carolina. Some of them through the eyes of the people who guide tours at some of our state's most fascinating destinations. By safari, by trolley, by fork, through nature, through time, and more. A couple of interesting photos before we begin. The title was on one page. On the next page, we have a picture of a gentleman with a full brown beard and wearing a straw hat of some kind. He's got a big smile on his face, and he's sitting in a Model T. And behind him is a beautiful green tree in front of a building which is made of some kind of stone, it looks like, and has some kind of a very unusual roof made of I don't think it's a thatch, but it's very like curved wood is coming around the edge and making a crisscross pattern. The caption says, Travel back in time with Mountaineer Motor Tours owner Heath Towson, who will show you the historic site of downtown Asheville or the storied Grove Park neighborhood from the back of a 1923 Ford Model T. You know, I'm in the process of buying a new car myself, and they asked if I wanted running boards. And I said, why would I want running boards, especially when so many of them are very, very narrow these days? I never understood the purpose of a running board, but here we have running boards on the Model T, and it's really obvious why they had it. It's a very wide running board, and there's a black metal toolbox strapped down, and then there is it's a suitcase. It's an old-fashioned suitcase, very narrow, lot smaller than we have today, but it's sitting behind a movable metal mesh. It kind of folds open like the old-fashioned elevator doors do. And I would guess the running board is about a foot wide on this vehicle. And then, of course, the door used to come out high enough to clear a toolbox or anything that was sitting on there. Overleaf, where we have the title, A Ride on the Wild Side, we see an open bus sort of vehicle. It's like a truck with a long bed, and people are sitting in it, and there's a roof on it. And there's three rhinoceros grazing in a big open field. And then on the right, it says, Zufari guests explore the Watani grasslands habitat, whose 40 acres are home to southern white rhinos, fringe-eared oryx, and other species. I don't quite know why they call them fringe-eared. I don't see much fringe on the ears, but the oryx have very long, I'm going to call them spikes on their head, antlers, if you will, but they're perfectly straight with very sharp points on the end, and they're around the edge is rimmed it's like a screw is what it looks like. It could be screwed into the ground, if you will, because it's very uh, very curved, and it's about, quarter to a half inch deep against the antler itself. But I don't see much fringe on their ears. Rhino social media stinks. It's not the social part, though. On the Zufari tour of the 40-acre Watani Grasslands habitat at the North Carolina Zoo in Asheboro, guide Thomas Mickamore, explains that the seven female southern white rhinoceroses that live there share information. A lot of it. Everything from, are they pregnant? Are they young? Are they old? And are they ready to get pregnant? Are they sick? Are they healthy? He says. As the safari-worthy Ford F-550 maneuvers to get a better view of Linda, Natalie, and the rest of the herd, Messamore directs the driver to stop in a particular spot. He asks the guest to take a big whiff and then explains why Rhino Twitter stinks. It's a heap of dung. Well, technically, it's a midden, but no matter what you call it, it's still a pile of poop. It's just that these piles are packed with rhino hormones, which the girls can read like a book. A rhino will come and leave a post, Mickamore says, and then the next rhino will come up and sniff and read the post and will leave a comment, and then continue onward. The middens are an important form of communication and sense of home for the rhinos, which is why the piles are left alone for weeks at a time. Keepers only clean it up about once a month, maybe twice a month, Mickamore says, and they pick the oldest piles first so as to not break up the communication. The rhino poop is just one memorable moment on a journey that begins when the second of two reinforced steel rhino gates slides closed, and everyone on the open-air bus takes a moment to find their bearings. Most patrons never get this perspective of the zoo, being in a habitat with 70-plus wild animals. The habitat is made to resemble African grassland, complete with towering, fabricated termite mounds that hide feeding stations for the smaller residents. And for those taking the tour on a humid Piedmont afternoon, with the chirp of cicadas cutting through the hot, still air, it even feels like rolling onto an African savanna. For the next 45 minutes or so, Mickamore educates and entertains. He peppers guests with facts about the Watani habitat, about the seven species of antelope that call the North Carolina Zoo home, and about the stars of the show, the formidable yet docile southern white rhinos, tinted Randolph County red from the local soil. It's easy to be distracted by the exotic species grazing just a few yards away, but Mickamore keeps the attention of his charges with one-liners and anecdotes about the animals. As the bus slowly rumbles behind the new baboon habitat and up to where the rhinos are lounging, necks craned to see the enormous animals hiding in plain sight. Anticipation turns to excitement and then to awe as the rhinos come into view. "Do you like unicorns?" Mickamore asks a girl wearing a unicorn T-shirt. "Did you know they're real?" "They are, and they're magical." "And what is a unicorn?" he continues. "Well, it's a horse with a horn. And since rhinos and horses are related, and rhinos have horns," Mickamore pauses to let the revelation sink in, "these are just super chubby unicorns." Each tour lets the personalities of the guides shine through, especially when they share their pet names for the animals. One guide calls the herd of male water bucks, a large semi-aquatic species of antelope with long ringed horns, the judgy boys. Mickamore agrees. Nothing compares to the water buck's stare, because once they start staring, it's so judgy. These water bucks once played a role in the Waterbuck Species Survival Plan, known as SSP, kind of like an eHarmony dating app for the animals, Mechabor says. But their services were no longer needed. When that happens, the animals end up at a facility like the NC Zoo, where they live out the rest of their days in a boys' club called Bachelor Herd. Same goes for the comparatively tiny Thompson's gazelles. One big difference between the two bachelor herds, though, besides the obvious disparity in size, is that while the waterbucks secrete an oil that makes them smelly bad and probably taste terrible to predators, the tommies are, to put it delicately, tasty. Everybody wants to eat the tommy, Mechabor says. This is the chicken nugget. They are literally Africa's fast food. The nearby fringe-eared oryx, a large species of antelope with long straight horns that form a V at the top of their heads, has earned the nickname the Alarm System of Africa, Mechabor says. They're tall, and they've got those beautiful black lines on their faces which deflect glare. They may see farther along the grassland than a lot of other animals, so when they start running, other animals notice and start running too. Around every turn, zoofari guests are greeted with stunning views of the habitat, as well as a behind-the-scenes glimpse of the adjacent African elephant north habitat. Okay, it's only a peek through the trees of a huge ear flapping, but it still warrants a look, 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 from one of the kids on board. Conversely, the bus itself becomes something of an exhibit for zoo-goers visiting the Africa habitats. It isn't every day that you happen upon a safari driving among the rhinos in the middle of Randolph County. Far from the end of the habitat, Mechabor spots the herd of female greater kudu, a tall brush or forest-dwelling antelope, calmly grazing. Unlike the waterbucks and tommies, the greater kudus, SSP, calls for a male suitor to visit the zoo to try to increase the species population, possibly as soon as this fall. All told, five of the species living on the Watani grasslands are part of the zoo's breeding program. The greater kudu, the southern white rhino, the fringe-eared oryx, the bongo, a primarily nocturnal antelope, and one of the most endangered of all, the Adra gazelle, of which there are only about 500 remaining in the wild. As the truck rolls down the dirt road along the backside of the habitat, Mechabor spots the Adras and asks the driver to stop. He points out the gazelles with their white bellies, rumps, and faces as people jockey to get a photo with Carolina pines in the background. Mechabor explains that despite the fact that the Adra gazelles are a desert species, the zoo was asked to host three of them, a male and two females, on the Watani grasslands habitat due to the success of its antelope breeding program. Now we're just waiting for nature to take its course, he says. With a staccato croak of bullfrogs serenading guests on the way back to the gate, Mechabor closes the tour by sharing what the zoo is doing to save more than its resident animals. Conservation efforts range from the zoo's SSP breeding and saving animals from extinction programs to involvement in many international wildlife conservation programs intended to reduce human-animal conflicts, which are a serious issue throughout Africa. One example, the zoo's southern white rhino conservation efforts, which are making a significant impact in Namibia. On the rhino home front, the zoo's breeding program has been remarkably successful, largely thanks to the maternal prowess of Linda, mother of Abby, Kit, Nandi, and Jojo, and grandmother to Bonnie and Mugu, the matriarch of this magical herd of chubby unicorns. North Carolina Zoo is on Zoo Parkway in Asheboro, 800-488-0444. And now, all aboard for history. Guides on Newbern's historic trolley tour show off the varied and elegant architecture of the city, while also introducing the real people behind the stories and legends, written by Mark Kemp. You'd be forgiven for losing your temporal bearings while in Newbern. It's almost a requirement in this old-world coastal city that sits at the confluence of the Neuse and Trent rivers. The small group of history buffs huddled at the corner of Pollock and George Streets on an overcast weekday seem to understand this. Directly across from them, an elaborate Georgian wrought iron gate opens to the sprawling courtyard of Tryon Place, the painstakingly accurate replica of North Carolina's first permanent capital, originally completed in 1770. Not even half a block away, in the opposite direction, is the stately John Wright Stanley House, where President George Washington stayed while passing through the town during his three-month tour of the South in the spring of 1791. Standing in the doorway of an old-fashioned red and black trolley, Mark parked in the shade of a billowing magnolia tree, Mike Wojka tugs at the bill of his baseball cap, welcoming a few stragglers to the group. He's been chatting with Allie Frederick, who just moved to Newbern from Topsail Island 2 months ago. She brought along a couple of friends from out of state. In fact, almost everyone milling about here, waiting to embark on the Newbern Historic Trolley Tour, is from anywhere but North Carolina. There's Dave and Terry Martin, who've traveled across the country from Torrance, California, Roy and Rhonda Alexander from Buckeye, Arizona, and Jim and Sue Walter from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Even Wojka, the tour guide for today's outing, arrived here less than a year ago from Coral Springs, Florida. Before then, the 65-year-old retired bureaucrat had never set foot in Newbern. Now he's a proud resident whose knowledge of the city's history runs deep. Most people, when they retire, they move to Florida, Wojka says. My wife and I moved away from Florida. He waves his arm up George Street, pointing to the embarrassment of historical riches surrounding him. The palace, the John Wright Stanley House, the former property of Stanley's mixed-race son, John Carruthers Stanley, popularly known as Barber Jack, and several other structures lining this one tiny city block. South Florida has no history, Wojka says with a laugh. Coral Springs wasn't even incorporated until 1963. We wanted to retire in a place with deeper roots. Roots don't much run deeper, or don't run much deeper than they do in Newbern, the state's second oldest city. Over the next hour and a half, Wojka and his trolley operator, Wayne Miller, will escort this group of 20 tourists past colonial mansions and Civil War sites, 200-year-old churches, and a massive cemetery with ancient oak trees draped in Spanish moss. They'll roll by the downtown drugstore where Pepsi was invented, stop at a building once listed in the Green Book Guide used by black travelers during the Jim Crow era, and continuing through the parts of Newbern that burned to the ground during the Great Fire of 1922. They won't just drive by these sites, though. Wojka is a master storyteller with a dynamic personality, able to put human faces to the old buildings, homes, and businesses scattered around Newbern. He'll tell how Barber Jack was emancipated, later became the wealthiest black man in 19th century North Carolina, and ironically may have been the largest slave owner in Craven County. He'll tell of the deadly duel between Barber Jack's white brother, Congressman John Stanley, and former North Carolina Governor Richard Dobbs Spaight, whom Stanley shot and killed behind Newbern's Masonic Hall in 1802. Relating exciting tales from the Southern history is not something that the Pennsylvania-born Woyka, a former deputy city manager with a degree in environmental engineering, was trained to do. Nor is it something he ever expected to be doing in his retirement years. It all started when he began digging into the history of his own home in Newbern, an elegant Queen Anne-styled house on Johnson Street, built in 1894 by Newbern Chamber of Commerce head Charles Ives and his poet wife Hannah. "My wife says the only reason I became a trolley tour guide is so that I could talk about our house," Woyka says. And there may be some truth to that. There's a spiritual connection, he suggests. Living in a house where people built lives and made families in an entirely different era, in a different world. The experience of being in that same space that someone occupied more than 100 years ago, who went up the same staircase, who walked the same floors, who probably complained about the same windows. I think that's pretty cool, he says. While searching for old photos of the house's earlier years, Woyka tracked down some of the Ives' grandchildren, now in their late 80s and early 90s. Three of them, two from Raleigh and one from South Carolina, were so excited to hear from him that they drove all the way to Newbern to meet the Woykas. It was an emotional 2-day experience. Each grandchild came with boxes of pictures and other memorabilia, including some original poetry written by their grandmother. One day, they made a trip to Cedar Grove Cemetery, where 93-year-old grandson Charles Bryan, who lived in Newbern for his first 30 years of life, located the graves of his parents and grandparents. "As we were walking through," Woyka says, "he'd pass by other gravestones and go, 'Oh, this guy was a doctor. Very nice. He had an office on Pollock Street. And, oh, I knew this girl. She sat behind me in school.' He was having the greatest time reminiscing, and I was having a great time just walking along and experiencing it with him." On the next trolley tour, Woyka invited Bryan and his 88-year-old cousin Charles Ives III to come along. "And when we passed by our house," Woyka says, "I had the driver stop, and I introduced them to the other people on the tour. I said, 'These are the grandsons of the person who built this house,' and everybody clapped. It was wonderful." As today's trolley lumbers back toward Tryon Palace, past St. Cyprian's, one of the state's oldest black Episcopal churches, past Union Station and the Spanish moss-covered grounds of Christ Church, past downtown shops and restaurants, and the drugstore where Caleb Bradham invented Pepsi, Woyka drops old Barber Jack's name one last time. As the passengers disembark, say their pleasantries, and go their separate ways, Woyka gets philosophical about his new retirement gig. "One of the things I try to do on these tours," he says, "is talk about a character early on and then reintroduce them later on in ways to give a fuller story of these people and places." He laughs. "If I were just reciting historical facts, like, 'That house is this many square feet and it was built this many years ago,' I don't think it would be much fun for anybody. To me, the fun is putting some faces, putting some feeling behind the brick and the wood." The trolley is sitting idle again, resting beneath that magnolia tree. Over the course of 90 minutes, Woyka has woven names and places and events together in a tapestry that now feels almost three-dimensional. Old Newbern is new again. Mark Kemp is a senior writer at Our State, and the Newbern Historic Trolley Tour departs at 610 Pollock Street in Newbern. They have a website, newberntours.com. And now we'll see how much of savoring the state we can get through. From Asheville to Charlotte to Wilmington, a North Carolina food tour company headed by a woman passionate about fine dining offers tasty nuggets of local history and cuisines. Written by M.A.N. Wright. Standing in the middle of Levine Avenue of the Arts, one might get the impression that Charlotte was built yesterday. Slanting steel channels weave themselves into the facade of the Harvey B. Gantt Center for African American Arts and Culture. The curved orange column in front of the Bechler Museum of Modern Art and Duke Energy's Plaza, gleaming inverted pyramid, surround visitors with contemporary and futuristic designs. To guests of Taste Carolina Gourmet Food Tours in Charlotte, everything about the city's center shouts new. It's almost a shock when tour guide Johnny Wright leads the group to an ancient flagstone lane tucked away like Harry Potter's Diagon Alley. Here in Brevard Court, amid all the glass and metal, small restaurants, bars, dessert shops, and a tea house beckon. Built in 1917 during Charlotte's textile boom, Brevard Court was originally an open-air cotton market. Now one of its brick office and storage buildings houses a bar with dark hardwoods, leather, and well-padded seats that give the place a pub-like feeling. Wright directs the group to a narrow, winding staircase leading up to the Cotton Room, a southern-inspired speakeasy known for its old-fashioned cocktail recipe that dates back to the Revolutionary War times. Rye or any spirituous liquor, mixologist Stephen Schofield explains from behind the bar as he fans out the ingredients like a blackjack dealer. It doesn't have to be whiskey. It can be rum or even tequila, depending on your palate and plans for the next morning. Schofield, a bearded, sturdy fellow, speaks with the air of a guy who's seen a few things. His gruff yet affable demeanor inspires immediate confidence. Angostura bitters and Angostura orange bitters for an herbaceous hit, brown sugar, which has more flavor than white, and a splash of water. That's all there is to it. In fact, there's much more. As Schofield assembles the cocktails, taking time to demonstrate technique and proportions, he goes in-depth on the agriculture, economy, and social customs that produced this classic American drink. His enthusiasm has even the non-whiskey lovers hanging on his every word. And the finished product? A surprising delight. Somehow, the rye and sugar balanced with neither overpowering the other. But all good times must come to an end. After half an hour of being immersed in the sights, aromas, and flavors of a previous century, it's on to the next destination. And, of course, our magazine must come to an end also, because we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.